Portland, and returning it over to the Talking Earth in just a moment here. So stick around for that, and thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the flip-flop, good buddies.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Vintage Ska and Rock Steady with Keith and Tex on Saturday, December 22nd from 9 to 11:30 p.m. at the Jack London Review in Portland. Keith Rowe and Philip Texas Dixon are most known for their Rock Steady hits Stop That Train, Hypnotic Eyes, and Tonight. This event features Keith and Tex as well as Winston Flames Jarrett and DJ Zach Doe for this holiday concert. Again, that's Vintage Ska and Rock Steady with Keith and Tex on Saturday, December 22nd from 9 to 11:30 p.m. at the Jack London Review, 529 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
So this is Christmas.
On Monday, December 24th, Prison Pipeline hosts will feature your holiday messages to your loved ones in prison, as well as greetings from prisoners for those on the outside. Email your message to kboppc@gmail.com or snail mail your holiday message to KBOO Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Then tune in on Monday, December 24th at 6:30 p.m. Again, that's kboppc@gmail.com or mail KBOO Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. And happy holidays from the Prison Pipeline Collective every Monday evening at 6:30 p.m.
You're listening to KBOO FM, Portland. Good evening. My name is Sophia Hellstrom-White. Welcome. This is the Talking Earth radio program. And my lovely wife and co-host, Amanda Hellstrom-White, will not be able to host with me tonight. So it's just me and four rapscallion poets who are actually quite talented. And, you know, whether some of them will want to admit it or not. Before I introduce the poets, I want to say tonight's theme is Under the Influences, where we'll be talking about writers who have influenced these poets, and perhaps, like, in what ways you can hear the influence or see them if you're reading it. And we're going to have them read the works of those who've influenced them and their own writing, because that's what it's all about, is, you know, hearing the influences of people and hearing how influences cause the creation of their own work. And our readers tonight will be Chris Tobey, Amy Temple Harper, Kristen Berger, and Pecos B. Jett. So, I'm wondering, we'll start off first with Pecos. I'll do my little intro. I've known Pecos for blank teen years. We'll stop it there. And so he was like one of first time I saw him read live, it was like sunlight hitting your forehead in the middle of your night. Like, this doesn't make any sense, but it's fabulous.
And no pressure.
Is that a compliment?
In one of my, you know, Sophia S. compliments where you're like, thank you, maybe. But, you know, this is when, like, Pecos kind of looked like the forgotten member of Soundgarden. So he doesn't look like that now. He looks more like a member of, what was the Insane in the Membrane band?
Cypress Hill.
Cypress Hill. Thank you, Patrick.
That's what I was going for.
Our engineer, Patrick Bocard, with all the music knowledge. Anyway, Pecos is just a wonderful, warm-hearted person and an overwhelming talent. So, Pecos, are you going to read some of your influences first and then some of your work?
I will. I'll read two parts of Richard Brautigan.
I knew he was coming.
So this is from The Galilee Hitchhiker. Baudelaire was driving a Model A across Galilee. He picked up a hitchhiker named Jesus who had been standing among a school of fish, feeding them pieces of bread. "Where are you going?" asked Jesus, getting into the front seat. "Anywhere! Anywhere out of this world!" shouted Baudelaire. "I'll go with you as far as Golgotha," said Jesus. "I have a concession at the carnival there, and I must not be late." Galilee Hitchhiker, Part 2. The American Hotel. Baudelaire was sitting in a doorway with a wino on San Francisco's Skid Row. The wino was a million years old and could remember dinosaurs. Baudelaire and the winer were drinking Petri Muscatel. "One must always be drunk," said Baudelaire. "I live in the American Hotel," said the wino, "and I can remember dinosaurs." "Be you drunken ceaselessly," said Baudelaire. This is a poem from the first page I open to in a spiral notebook. It doesn't have a title. I think I'll call it Junk Drawer. Think of all that can happen when you open a notebook and pen your thoughts. You may fall apart or sew yourself back together. You may just stare in the mirror, unsure if you've ever been that person or anything. My psyche is a junk drawer. I sift around for clarity. Find an old battery, a paperclip, a twist tie. I meditate on the meaning of the dry highlighter, its neon ghost tip, its useless plastic husk. Thoughts are fruit flies hovering over a sweet stain. Regrets are mosquito bites you mindlessly scratch and return to their sting. If there was a point to make, I'd have done it by now. By now.
Isn't it one of the best feelings in the world to, like, open up, like, a notebook and be like, that piece wasn't half bad? Okay. You done
with this? I'm currently feeling that way. It wasn't half bad. Exactly. Nice job, Pecos.
It was 85% at minimum good.
I'm going to keep it.
Good. Is this your set?
Yeah, let's pass the mic.
All right. So, Kristen.
Sophia.
Hi. So, I have what I think, at least, is a funny story about my first meeting with you. So, I ran a reading called Ink Noise Review back in the day, back under the old name. And I believe you were reading in support of Sage Cohen.
Oh, yeah.
And a few months prior, I'd been asked to be one of the editors for the poetry edition of a magazine called Bear Deluxe. And I was sent an enormous folder full of poems.
Oh, I remember this story.
And yes.
You rejected me.
I did not reject you. I did not reject you. You. Anyway, there were all.
Awkward.
Sophia.
I did not reject her. She.
Continue.
I was not. Yeah. Anyway, I'd like to think I can make this story sound less brutal on my part, but so there were all these poems I gave, and they had all the names removed, and I read all of them. Yours was one I actually gave a 4 on the 1 to 5 scale where they had us rating, and then they went to the main editor, but I didn't know who you were. And then several months later, about 4 months later, you were reading at Ink Noise, and I heard that poem. And I'm like, wait a minute, that poem stands out. You're that poem. But
you owe her a point.
I do.
I'm going to earn back my point tonight.
I should have just given you a five.
Star.
You know, it's... okay, I feel bad. Five was the absolute maximum. I was waiting for, like, to run across an Odyssey or something in there to, like, give it the 5 points.
Kristen, I give you a five.
It's okay.
But, hey... That everybody has to have a five now. They can't deal with a four being a really good compliment.
I am so okay with being mediocre, so thanks.
I give you a 10.
Okay, fine.
This goes to 11.
Anyway.
15.
So, Kristen, you have a whole bunch of books published, correct?
No, I don't have a whole bunch. I have two and a chapbook.
That's a whole bunch compared to people who don't have any. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. And... you know, it's like, for example, you know, never mind. I was going to make a bad joke, but...
Would you like me to read a poem?
I would like you to read a poem. I was about to jump into that, but thank you for saving me the time.
So I want to say thank you.
Sure.
For having us on so late past our bedtime. It's kind of fun, actually. And I'm going to read a poem by a person who was sort of a late influence for me. Her name is Eva Solitas, and she was an Alaskan poet, and she died 2 years ago in January, but she left behind some pretty amazing stuff. So I discovered her up in Alaska a few years ago. And this is called Before the Grace of You Go I, from her book Many Ways to Say It. When I lay flat on you like a specimen in a press, cheek deep in the damp mushroom smell of you, when I splay my toes in your muskeg, dig my fingers in your pelt, flowers faded, mostly away, skeletal lichens spidering this small hummock topped by gale flattened spruce, there's nothing I need. Willingly I would shed all that, but these old clothes twist me inside out like prey, examine, dissect, catalog me, and I will eat your saltbush, your quillback fish, your sulfur fungus arrayed on the dead tree. I will gnaw the bones of your drowned deer. When I go, may I be pregnant from our animal love on the stream bed and on the bluff. And what I love about her is, one, just she's so animal, mm-hmm. And she was a whale biologist. She studied killer whales in the Prince William Sound, and she just has a naturalist's eye and ear, and the music just kind of comes out of just naming the natural world. So, and I love her kind of rawness.
I love how you can practically feel the temperature, the coldness of nature, or you can hear branches breaking when you hear that rap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is something, a quality you share, actually, in many instances.
I just found that she was both an influence and also sort of kin.
Mm-hmm.
So and I'm going to read one poem that is actually a collaborative poem that I wrote with, prompted by my friend Scott Siegel, who's also a big influence in my writing, Confluence. So this is how it's done. Camp smoke and a hard nap. Swainson thrush song winnows up cedar trunks, straddling flanks of spruce. Nurse logs gone soft. Sand glints on his scalp. And the tent becomes their incubator, the thin walls pulsing. Limbs take residence in the hollows, track nothing but smoke, an acute day, tindered time, living proof. Oh.
That's the hardest part for this for me is not clapping, so it's the hell with that, I'm going to clap. Because... Yeah, it's we both went to a lot of live readings, so it's
I'm sure everyone's near their radio clapping.
Yeah.
Right now.
It's kind of weird, yeah.
Hopefully they're not doing that in the car. That would be...
Everybody's in bed.
Good.
Nobody's in a car.
They better be clapping.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like a Tinkerbell moment. You know, it's clap. Clap for the poets. Keep them alive. And up next is Amy Temple Harper, who what can I say? I can say a lot of things about Amy Temple Harper. She's adjusting the microphone. Okay, I have to work. Oh, sorry. Is that going to work? I don't want to.
It's perfect.
All right. So Amy Temple Harper, I also met 19 years ago. Well, 14. And Amy came at the tail end of what was my favorite open mic reading ever. It was like on the bad half, but she was the most entertaining person on the... you know, it's like you could say Star Trek movies, there was everything after Search for Spock, you know, but Amy was Search for Spock. It was like the peak, the awesomeness, the wonderful. Anyway, and you've got at least one book published, don't you have to?
I don't have to, but I do.
I was gonna say you have two, don't you?
I have one.
You have one. You see. And that was, I believe, like, that happened around that time when I threw that big book chapbook party thing where...
I'm under the influence of you.
Hmm. Aww. Aww. That's like the nicest thing somebody said to me today. Anyway, Amy, do you want to read some poems?
Okay. Thank you, first of all, for having me on. I'm also under the influence of Pecos Bijet, who we have worked together for some years. The first person to help me publish was a professor at Portland State named Primus St. John. And if he's listening, for God's sakes, would you just call me? I made you dinner and everything. So this is from his book, Communion. Primus St. John, poems 1976 to 1998, Copper Canyon Press. This is called Lyric 12. I believe in myself slowly. It takes all the doubt I've got. It takes my wonder. And I guess I'll read one of mine.
Please.
This is one I wrote on the plane flying from Denver to PDX 12/12/18. It's called For Consideration. The Oriole Family and the Titmouse. The cost of a new furnace and HVAC properties. Whether the sun will be setting now or even now. How high a baby on an airplane can sing when really he is crying. Whether it is worth having a walnut tree in one's yard. Whether 1/4 or 1/8 of the passengers on this flight are proud boys. How small I can write in this notebook and how loud I can shout.
And you're handing over the headphones to Chris Toby. Chris Toby, who has books published, has a politically themed poetry reading that, as great as this reading is, for multiple reasons, I'm hoping it isn't a long-lived reading.
Yeah.
And
Women Writers Against Trump.
Yes.
I'm hoping that as well.
Yes. And I first met you at... another reading I was hosting, Stone Soup, which was a precursor to Ink Noise, which is the reading where I met Kristen. And my first thoughts were, I need to get both of them. Yeah, you know, you and your sister Allison. I'm like, I need to get them to
I have a sister, Allison Toby.
Yes.
Yes.
And I was like, I need to get them as many readings as possible. And,
aww.
You know, and that's just my personal experience, but it's been a pleasure hearing you over the years, and it's different things all the time, and I'm really wildly curious what your influences are.
Well,
I guess you'll demonstrate.
I will. I'll share some of these influences. So how many of these influences should I share right now?
How many are you comfortable
with? First of all, I thought that under the influence, I'm just going to go here, everyone meant that I show up drunk. Is that?
You would not be no? the first person here to do that.
I'm not. But how many should I share, two right now?
You can share two, and if you want to throw in one of yours right now, you can. Or
I'm
a
virgin to this radio business.
I see. Well, we're going to pop your cherry on this as much as possible. So,
but I do have to confess, when I was a teenager, my dad had a radio show in Cleveland, Ohio. He was a musician and had a radio show, and I used to call and prank call constantly. I know my sister's listening right now, just wanting to prank call. I'm sorry, Allison, you cannot.
Oh, poor Patrick will be left with the calls, but I don't know.
I realize some of you cannot hear me since you don't have headphones, but your sister is not. And Primus St. John, unfortunately, is not called yet. Okay. Sorry.
Are people allowed to call in?
Patrick, are they allowed to call in on this?
That is the judgment of our host, Sophia.
Oh, Sophia. Allison, you may actually encourage Allison Toby to call in.
I'll think about it.
It's up to Sophia to allow Allison to get on the air.
Under consideration. Okay, maybe after this. So the influences I brought in are I decided to bring in the humans who I consider to be my partners in poetry and who give me feedback on my work before I send it out into the world because those humans do greatly influence us. And the first one I'm going to begin with happens to have influenced me since she came out of the womb.
Oh.
Or maybe we were in the womb together. That is my sister.
Yes.
Allison Toby.
Who can call in if she wants.
Okay. I thought that may give her permission. Okay. But we collaborate on many things. We wrote a book together, and I don't send anything into the world until Allison sees that, and I have great reverence for my sister's work. So this is weird because there's a giant microphone in front of my face, and I don't know how to hold this. Oh, gosh.
Here, I'll hold it for you.
Okay. I think I've – thank you. Crossword constellations. People like to say that Einstein never did well in math class, that his teachers even thought he was dumb, but Einstein's teachers never thought he was dumb. They only thought he was an incorrigible jackass. The kid who knew all the answers, especially the ones the teachers didn't. Maybe Einstein began to build the A-bomb when he was 7. Maybe he began with the image of a chrome-painted ham, heavy, thick, with bounce. Or maybe it all derived from the sizzle of an eyelash too close to the heater, the smell of burnt protein with hint of hickory. But it probably wasn't anything so base, so earthbound. He was making crosswords in the constellations, not like the rest of us, who float off in pairs, tethered to nothing but ourselves.
Damn, your sister's amazing.
Damn my sister.
Just like you, but I don't want to be like, damn, your sister is amazing.
Well, you know, I would never claim to be brilliant. I would never, ever claim that, but I will claim that my sister is brilliant.
And she can claim the same for you, so you don't have to. It'll just be like a passing of the compliments.
We all love you, Allison Toby. Okay, and the next one is from someone whose first book just came out. It is for sale at Powell's Books, All That Wasted Fruit. Armine Ignadosian, I've known her since my 20s, and we met in a workshop in LA where we got copies of one another's work before we actually met, and we developed these massive crushes on one another after reading each other's work. Has this happened to any of you? Okay, yeah, okay. Matt, we had huge crushes on one another. Nothing when we met, nothing romantically came of those crushes, but a great friendship evolved out of that. And listeners, I am not in my 20s anymore. So we have been, she's been one of my biggest influences for a very long time. So I will share one of her poems from her book, All That Wasted Fruit. California Love Poem. The sun has an orgasm across the valley as Pasadena opens up in front of me. The suicide bridge pushing an arm out of green sleeves, orange blossoms keening after a mid-spring heat wave, the rose bowl yawning in a ravine. It is not enough to love the one you love, to drive towards the ocean just to fall into bed with him, then return home alone, drowsy from sex and no sleep. You want to keep driving east towards black rocks and tarantulas of Nevada, or south towards the unilateral mirage of water, where the Salton Sea groans in her deadwood hammock. On a map, California looks like she's hugging Nevada, leaning in for a deep kiss. She is tentative. He is a sharp-tongued, diamond-studded menace, kissing her at the same time, pushing her into the ocean.
Wow. That's a poem.
Yeah. That's, she has some poems.
Yeah. Those are, and I just meant that in the, like, that, like, definition when you're looking for what a poem is. Like, when you're thinking of writing one, you're like, that's... that's like an ideal to reach for.
I would like to eat that poem.
Pretty much, yes. All right, Pecos, do you have any poems for us to eat or at least listen to?
I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you want to influence or some of mine?
Yes, I would like both.
So, yes. Okay.
Okay.
Let's travel back to Galilee then. Part 6 of The Galilee Hitchhiker by Richard Brautigan. Salvador Dali. Are you or aren't you going to eat your soup, you bloody old cloud merchant? Jean Duval shouted, hitting Baudelaire on the back as he sat daydreaming out the window. Baudelaire was startled. Then he laughed like hell, waving his spoon in the air like a wand, changing the room into a painting by Salvador Dali, changing the room into a painting by Van Gogh. Gogh. I'm going to be arty and say it.
Who is that?
Richard Brautigan. Right. Language is a three-ring circus. Poetry is a high-stake, high-wire act. Somewhere between flying and falling, precariously perched on swaying metaphor, unsure if the crowd wants you to succeed or fall, if any of them are still down there at all.
Kristen, are you ready?
Oh.
Well, now that I've done my awkward intros for everyone, I can just let them read.
So this one's probably an influence for a lot of people. Naomi Shihab Nye.
Oh.
But I'm going to pick a poem I don't know that many people know her for. I mean, she's just written so much. But what I love about her and what she's sort of informed for me is paying attention to the plain things, the domestic things, the everyday things, and somehow in her mapping of a poem, something unexpected comes through and some very needed little truth.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be huge, but it's needed. So this is called Yeast. Each morning from the dim secrecy of the school kitchen, that single scent sweetens the day. Rectangles already baking, legions of bread on long silver trays. Like history, it won't stop happening. Bread spreading its succulent flesh, whatever we learn or unlearn in the room with faded, snapping maps. Once the map flipped up so hard, Greenland caught me on the jaw and I had to go to the health room. Lying on the small cot, closing my eyes under the ice bag, I could smell the bread better from there. Sometimes it seemed so obvious. I should have been a slab of butter, the knife that cuts, the door to the oven.
every time I hear a poem from her, I'm like, I want that line, if not all mm-hmm. of them, but like history, it won't stop happening. I'm like, God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love too how she writes going back into childhood. Yeah. And she just sort of recovers some of these memories, and it makes me wonder too what might be lurking in my.
Yeah, there's always mouths. Something there. So
yeah, I'm gonna read a poem. Not in a book. Mm. The Thoughts and Prayers of Trader Joe's Shoppers. That tonight will be the quiet, easy Sunday when all cars obey the lights and the moon escorts clouds to the other side of the overpass, under which homeless families are thankful for no rain and heavy church tips. That tonight you reduce the odds and leave the children home. The one fuming that you won't let him get the Nerf gun that handles and loads like a semi-automatic. Because you are the mother, and tonight will be the random night you return with a trunk full of groceries, nothing but a split nail, and no sirens in the distance.
Wow. That should be in a book soon.
Here, I'll put it in this one. It's my bookmark.
Nice. Nicely done. It's all right, Amy, you ready?
Sure.
Well, once you get the headphones yeah. on. So.
The next one I'm going to do under the influence is a student of mine who did an erasure poem this term. And I took me some time to figure out. She wrote on the back, "Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim" by David Sedaris. And her name is Isadora Coates. And awesome. It's two-sided. One is called Now. Though I was young when we left, at best, I was in the fifth grade. We got lucky. We got lucky again. My mother had a little breakdown. And when she could no longer take it, she threw us out. In eviction. "Get the hell out of my house," she said. I went down the hill. A few hours later, we returned home. I rang the bell and no one answered. The second side of this says risk and then. Her eagerness to please was absolute and naked. 6-year-old in a butter-colored coat gathered on the curb to watch. We'd been locked out of our house, this puffy figure awkwardly negotiating the crest of the hill. Kick her out of nature, just as she kicked us out of the house. This was how things went. We made our way back home. Thanks, Isadora. Thanks for a great class,
wow.
too.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read one of mine called Cramped Uptown.
Just like your book.
Cramped Uptown. That was the year we were cramped uptown. Camping on stilts, living among the pseudo-riche, no place to park. My son sleeping on the floor of the dining room because he had no room of his own. He had 2 blankets and half a pillow. We both had a need to stretch out and relieve some smashing urge to escape the city view. And the violence that resulted from you throwing somebody's heart off the balcony.
Mm. Well, Chris, are you ready to follow that?
No.
That's what I thought. You're going to have to do it anyway.
Okay.
If I may make a request, can we hear one of your lovely poems in this round?
Can I share my influences? Are we having another round?
Oh, you're about to read next. So, well,
are we having a round after this round? After this round right here?
I would assume so.
Okay, so yeah. Why don't I... Okay, I would like to share my poems last.
That works fine.
I feel more comfortable sharing others.
All right. You do you, or it's well, just, you do someone else, and that's you doing you.
So, I'm going to share one of Alicia Jo Raben's. She's a very awesome local poet. Poems from her new book. There's a theme here: new books. Everyone who needs to do some holiday shopping, who needs to stock some stockings?
Stock up on.
Stock, is that
stuff
what you say?
Stuff
your stockings.
Oh, stuff the stockings, that's right.
With verse.
Or you could say stock your poet.
Consumptions. Okay, so
stuff and Leisha, you're talking.
Yeah, Leisha's been a great influence in the last couple of years, and I definitely consider her one of my partners in poetry. So this is from her new book, Fruit Geode, and it's Exit Interview. She said, "You are underqualified for this. You will have others, but not this one." She said, "You are overqualified for this. You don't even know how to change a diaper, how to wrap it up tight so the poop stays inside." She said, "You still flinch when shit gets on your hands. Come back when you're done with that. Come back when you're done being precious. Come back when you're not pretty anymore, when you grow into your own pain. Then we can talk." Maybe I'm precious because I don't like to get poop on my hands.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to say that.
That makes me feel pretty precious.
But I love her new book because I kind of feel like I'm trapped inside of a David Bowie song, like Ground Control to Major Tom. It's in the best possible way, in that I feel like I'm, when I'm reading it, I'm floating above Earth a little bit. It's very otherworldly. And then the next one is from a book that, I hate to confess this, this is kind of where my life is at 41. This is from a book I slept with for a year and a half, maybe 2 years. I feel like that's maybe even more depressing. But I slept with this book for 2 years. And so this would be Andrea Hollander's book, Landscape with Female Figure. And I really did. I know you're all looking at me like I'm a freak, no, but I really did.
There's much, much worse things you could sleep with. Rest assured.
It's true. You could sleep with pickles. I mean, there's all kinds of things. But I did. I mean,
it's Pecos.
This book kept.
I knew this was going to happen.
Andrea Hollander, please continue.
Andrea Hollander is probably laughing. Okay.
But we hope.
No, she is. But this book kept me very good company during a very rough 2 years of my life. Okay, but 2 years is too depressing, so I'm going to say a rough 1.5 years of my life. Okay, so, and what I love about, first I'll say, what I love about Andrea's work is that it builds that bridge between writer and reader and allows me to cross over. Mm-hmm. And it basically does what, you know, I love her work for the reason I fell in love with literature, in that it makes me feel less alone in the world and reveals the human condition. Mm-hmm. So here is a poem from Landscape with Female Figure. Desire. She was looking for a way in. He was the one. Doubt surfaced, as it always did. She pushed it down, stood on it, a rock that made her taller. The way the trees stood in the all-day rain, the gray light around them, the way she peered through as if through windows, as if a forest were a house and all you had to do was enter. Inside, a low moan, cello maybe, or oboe. What does it take to ignore the end of the story that pulls you to it like a magnet against your desire? To finish instead at the penultimate page, the wanting and wanting and wanting. Yeah, I could eat that poem.
I don't even smoke, and I want to smoke a cigarette after hearing that poem. All right. Pecos, are you ready?
Sure.
All right.
This is a poem by a newer influence, Kavafi, C.P. Kavafi.
I love the Kavafi.
I'm feeling me some Kavafi these days. A lot like Brodigan, I like it for the brevity. It's such a gift when someone... It's not that I dislike longer poems, I just can't write them because I don't have that much attention span. But when someone gives you the gift of saying, you can also do it in half a page, should you choose to. As much as you can. And if you can't shape your life the way you want, at least try as much as you can not to degrade it by too much contact with the world, by too much activity and talk. Try not to degrade it by dragging it along, taking it around and exposing it so often to the daily silliness of social events and parties until it comes to seem a boring hanger-on. He's fun. He's a cheerful guy.
And you gave us a hot cup of coffee.
Hot cup of coffee. I'll do a quick couple shorts. Habit. Some people flirt with disaster. Others stalk it.
Oh, jeez.
Futility. Futility is just utility that gets effed up. It doesn't take much to make me feel special. I once caught 10 green lights in a row on the way home from work. It's true. I was there.
Is that your moment?
I'm all set.
That's the hardest part about hosting. I just want to sit here and watch everybody, but I have to like awkwardly talk now. Okay, Kristen.
Do we get to talk to each other after this?
I have
questions.
Oh, if you want to ask him something right now, go ahead. But
no, I mean, just like, I think it'd be cool to like.
Oh, after the show?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not like.
Or no, during the show, but I don't know. We'll see what time.
We'll figure out what happens.
I really want to comb your hair.
Why? Is it messy?
No, I just wanted to say that.
For bonding.
It was. All right, let's get to a poem.
I'm going to read from Tom Hennen, his Darkness Sticks to Everything. And he's a poet from northern Minnesota that I discovered a while back. And what I love about him is he just writes very simple-ish, plain lines. But sort of like Naomi, there's a turn in there if you're paying attention. And he's kind of a, from what I understand, just kind of a, he's outside of academia. He's worked his whole life like on farms and ranches and things. And so he just doesn't have much of him ego in his poems, which I like. Clouds rise like fish. During July on the prairie, the pine tree stands alone on the main street of a disintegrating country town. Its needles pump all day long. Still, it cannot turn all the passing carbon monoxide into anything useful. On its trunk, ants are stuck in the resin. From its top, we can see the dark clouds in the blue sky. The island in the lake drifts even farther from shore. Heat increases. The afternoon begins its insect hum. We can tell a storm is coming by looking into each other's eyes. And I'm going to read one because I heard that the atmospheric river is upon us tonight. We're going to get 3 inches of rain tomorrow or some craziness.
No.
Yes. The atmospheric river has plans. This is mine. My hand rests on your chest, breath shallowing. Only a few days ago, according to the stars, a storm gathering water to the hem of sky. This is a wind poem inspired by earth, latticed with disappearing rivers. I gave birth twice to show the universe I was serious. Lost twice because the body knows better. Every empty space is a leaning act of guesswork. The pot waiting for Sunday soup, air climbing its own steam. You're beautiful when turned in sleep, gone from me, heartbeat plucking collarbone, breath beneath dream. So much rush at the door. It's good, isn't it? Our backs against tomorrow's calm. The weathered trick of time.
It's like butter.
Butter. That's how creepily whisper into the microphone.
Butter.
Butter. Butter. But it's a poem. I can't believe it's not butter. All right, I'm going to slap myself for doing
this. It's like a big scoop of ice cream, and I just want to keep eating it.
Exactly.
With butter. and yogurt.
All right, Miss Amy, can you get us to stop talking about butter?
Yes, I have another Under the Influence poem. This is a collection that was called Zero Makes Me Hungry. It was published in 1976 by Edward Linders and Primus St. John. And this is actually William Carlos Williams. It's called The Act. There were roses in the rain. Don't cut them, I pleaded. They won't last, she said. But they're so beautiful where they are. Ugh! We were all beautiful once, she said, and cut them and gave them to me in my hand. I don't have any more poems except that I'm going to just one that I wrote tonight waiting for Chris. This is for the rains.
Are you reading out of your planner?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I was waiting for you.
I love that.
What it was when the rain hit my open eyeball. It was a wink, a tear, a flood.
Aww. All right, Chris, more of your influences.
I read all of the poems I brought for my influences, Sophia. Would you like me to read my own now?
Sure.
I'd just like to keep you on your toes.
And I've got improvising because I think we've got time for one more round, but we'll throw in talking,
okay,
too.
I just have to tell you that I'm reading from this because my printer, I don't have a printer. I don't own a printer. I'm not a jerk.
So you just read out of your collection of
books. But I did really like the movie The Jerk growing up. Okay. So these are two newer poems from... Do you like the movie The Jerk?
He hates these cans!
What about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels? Can you imitate that?
Pardon me, may I use the bathroom?
Yeah, may I use the bathroom? Oh, great. Now I have to read this with a straight face. Damn you. Okay.
I'm ready.
All right. So in a new series of poems I've been writing, each poem is basically a response to a man. Okay. This one responds to, woman is not yet capable of friendship. Women are still cats and birds, or at best, cows. Nietzsche. Moo. I have to keep a straight face. I have to come on.
But we don't have to.
I know you don't. Okay. I'll pretend like I'm at a poetry reading. All right, ready? All right. Take two. Moo. Love, I'm sorry for the time we were walking home with groceries in our arms. You carried the chicken and potatoes, and I held the chocolate. As we laughed about something I can't remember, our dog barked at someone and I just bolted, ran off. Also, love, there are all those mornings you'd wrap your arm around me, your hands spread across my spotted stomach. Good morning, you'd whisper, and I'd reply, moo. I'm sorry for that. I also hope you'll one day forgive me for the time you were weeping. Your mom had just died, and I charged as though you were red. Love, I regret all the evenings I'd drive home from work and open the door to smell roasting squash and garlic. We'd sit at our tiny kitchen.
Tiny kitchen? Continue.
Sorry, listeners. They're making this difficult to read. Okay. It's good. This is radio. We'd sit at our tiny kitchen table and you'd say, I love you, but then I'd regurgitate the ratatouille. I'm sorry about that, too. Love, I...
Stop it, Amy.
Love, I apologize for my aversion to leather and how we'd snuggle on the sofa, my nose in your neck, but then you'd cry on my back because unfortunately I weighed 1,000 pounds. Oh, Nietzsche. And love, what remorse I have for leaving you, for wandering away to graze in another pasture. There's no way I'm going to make it through the second poem. Oh my gosh. Listeners, they are all just on the floor, weeping, gyrating, pointing at me. I am a virgin to this.
We are trying so hard, Chris. Well,
I feel so those alone.
She's not, but okay. All right, everyone, make a straight face. I'm doing.
Can you turn your backs to me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Okay, this I'm gonna try, listeners. I'm gonna try. This is in response to a poem by Ted Hughes. Are parsoned to the old women's faces that are cold and folded like plucked dead hens' arses. Ted Hughes. Cock-a-doodle-doo. An old woman thought her face was a dead hen's arse. Maybe it was all the years of plucking and waxing. The woman had no... Is it because it's 10 or 11?
Yeah, I think it's
because it's maybe Kristen should read this.
Oh, yeah, I could bring a crowd down.
Can you... I can't get through it. I can't get through it with all of you laughing.
All right, I'll read it.
Okay. I don't laugh.
Thing against Ted Hughes.
Okay.
An old woman thought her face was a dead hen's arse. Maybe it was all the years of plucking and waxing. The woman had no idea what would make her think her face was a dead hen's arse and not a live hen's arse, and why the arse and not the beak, but she did. It couldn't be my age, the woman thought. It couldn't be the men, not when everyone knows men love older women, especially much older, especially with all the grandma porn and all the old women's sex costumes and the men who ogle elderly women in walkers. She had read so many books where men longed for older women, where old women seduced helpless wide-eyed men. She saw billboards where old women modeled teenage clothing, modeled Brazilian bathing suit bottoms. And she knew the trend, folding wrinkles into one's face using a dumpling dough press. People would stop her and take selfies. You look like a movie star, they'd say. They wouldn't leave her alone. She'd shrug. Maybe it was the way she'd sometimes cluck when she made love to her husband. This could be the reason, he'd whisper. One day I may trade you in for an older model. Or maybe it was all the eggs she ate, or her penchant for feathers, or how her mother used to call her, my little chickadee. The woman was unsure why she thought her face was a dead fowl's feces extruding cloaca. Can't pronounce that.
Cloaca.
Cloaca.
It's the technical term for chicken's anus.
Oh. She only knew that she was tired of seeing 20-year-old men with women who could be their grandmothers, old women who treated the men like so many dimpled birds.
Thank you, Kristen. You got through it.
I got my star.
You got through it.
I am just bowing to you in my respect for getting through that with a straight face.
And now she broke the microphone.
I may have to spin the... Okay.
I'll just hold it to the end.
I think it was okay. Fine.
All right. I think we can do... Hello, Engineer Patrick. Coming to save
Engineer
us.
Patrick.
Oh, somebody figured it out. Continue on.
All right. Except for Chris, I think we can do maybe one last round and we'll do the talking thing Kristen was talking about.
Oh, it's okay.
Oh.
Like talking heads?
Well, all right. Pecos, do you want to do a thing?
I just don't know what can be done after that.
Amy tried to rescue Kristen, and now her hands are all black and muddied.
Okay.
All right.
I'll read some shorts.
Moo.
I almost passed out, though. If you didn't want us to laugh, you shouldn't have brought such hilarity.
You had them yourself,
okay,
Chris.
I'm a dirty, rotten scoundrel.
I'm going to do two short pieces by Brodigan and then a couple shorts of mine.
Everybody in their shorts.
Richard Brodigan says, I feel horrible. She doesn't. I feel horrible. She doesn't love me, and I wander around the house like a sewing machine that's just finished sewing a turd to a garbage can lid. Oh, no. He's funny himself. He wrote a poem I really like called Boo Forever. Spinning like a ghost on the bottom of a top, I am haunted by all the space that I will live without you.
That makes me feel like I have a heart.
It happens. Science. I think science is great. Have you ever had freeze-dried ice cream? Those astronauts must have been thrilled when freeze-dried ice cream day rolled around. Pavlov's smoke shop, where everyone smokes because everyone is smoking. Pavlov's slam poet. We talk like this at poetry readings because we talk like this at poetry readings. In the shower. In the shower, you and I, like Adam and Eve in paradise, eating fruit from the tree of mystery, which won't get you kicked out. Only the water heater keeps us mortal.
Ooh. All right. Kristen, you want to do a thing?
Okay. I'm going to read from Everybody's Influence on is Mary Oliver.
Mary Oliver.
Because when I'm feeling a little lost in the world, I just pick up a little Mary-O, and she makes me feel better. Milkweed. The milkweed now, with their many pods, are standing like a country of dry women. The wind lifts their flat leaves and drops them. This is not kind, but they retain a certain crisp glamour. Moreover, it's easy to believe each one was once young and delicate, also frightened, also capable of a certain amount of rough joy. I wish she would walk with me out into the world. I wish you could see what has to happen, how each one crackles like a blessing over its thin children as they rush away. And you know, I'm just going to pass it so we can all get a little bit.
Oh no, she's saying she doesn't have anything.
Oh,
so
okay.
So read something and I guess we close with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
since those two bowed out early.
All right. This is a little one, because I wanted to write little or read little poems. Tributary. Float in salt water, milk blue and gold, fresh water ribboning from limestone tunnels, kick and swim, be the lookout. Be the body to hold when currents shift and little rivers come for you like mouths.
That was beautiful.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kristen, and thank you, Amy, and thank you, Chris Toby, and thank you, Pagos. And you were listening to Talking Earth on KBOO FM, and I'm Sophia Hellstrom-White, and next time I'm on this show, the lovely Amanda Hellstrom-White will be hosting with me, and maybe she's better at herding cats and keeping poets with straight faces than I am. So, but thank you so much, and thank you for our listeners, and have a great night, and thank you for everyone for making this such a warm experience.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sophia. You.
Did you know that everything you hear on KBOO Radio is now archived on the KBOO website? Music, news, public affairs, it's all there for you to listen on demand. And podcast. Look up your favorite KBOO shows by name on iTunes or your favorite podcasting software. You can listen when you want, share a link to a program you heard on the radio, and go to our website, kboo.fm, and click on audio. All the audio is there, and playlists for music shows are shown along with the audio recording, so you can follow along to find out the artists and titles of the songs that you hear. Again, it's all right there on KBOO.FM, on iTunes, or the KBOO app.
Hi, I'm Bob Madar, inviting you to come on over to Local Folks Podcast and listen to episode number 6 to discover how a local nonprofit in Corvallis, Oregon, provides essential and effective support to gleaners so they can help low-income people feed their families and heat their homes. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, list of programs, podcast, web only, and click on Local Folks.
You are listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio for the Northwest.
You are entering a zone of sound and imagery, a landscape of frequency, a vocabulary of modulation. There is the signpost up ahead. Please adjust your chronometers. This is Gremlin Time.
Tonight on Gremlin Time, a special look at that holiday icon, Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, Old Father Christmas. Later, Umatilla Rose will be joining me with some little special presentations, but first, we're going to jump right in to our selections from the Father Christmas Letters by John Ronald Reuel Tolkien, the author of The Lord of the Rings. And so now, here's Red Rider with part one of the Father Christmas Letters.
To the children of J.R.R. Tolkien, the interest and importance of Father Christmas extended beyond his filling of their stockings on Christmas Eve.